This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
It is National Ag Week, so we thought it appropriate to talk to an actual person in ag here in Douglas County. Evan Cruz from Cruz Farms has been in a number of times before. Thanks for coming in.
Good afternoon.
So for folks in the area, I mean, agriculture has always been a big thing here, though sometimes the folks that aren't around it don't realize how big agriculture is around here. And I know you were looking around with some of your ag connections about some sort of facts about ag in Oregon. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, the first one, you're asking how big agriculture is, and it's a little bit easier to look at it on a statewide level. Agriculture is about a $50 billion industry in the state, and the last time I looked, the total economy for Oregon was something like $220 billion. So it's a significant part of the state economy. And I do have some numbers here for, we don't have Douglas County split out on its own. We have Douglas, Josephine, and Jackson County. You know, how big is ag here? We've got a total of 6.1 million acres, and 624,000 are in farms. 60,000 is irrigated for a total production of $148 million. So agriculture is a significant part of the economy. And I believe we're about 1% of the population. So, you know, it's a lot of hardworking people getting out there and making some goods. 10% of all of Oregon's exports are agricultural exports. So, you know, it really is an important part of both the community and the statewide economy.
And Oregon's weather has also contributed to that. There are, you know, different, just like wine, which I probably can explain better than I can most ag products. You have different areas, different climates. You're able to grow different things in different places. And in some cases, we've had times over the years where Oregon was one of the biggest producers maybe in the world of certain crops.
Yeah, so I have a list here. We're number one in the United States for hazelnuts, or some of us call them filberts, Christmas trees, rhubarb, Dungeness crab, which, believe it or not, that's part of agriculture, potted azaleas, crimson clover, red clover seed, white clover seed, sugar beets, four seed, orchard grass seed, fescue seed, and ryegrass seed. So that's where we're number one. We grow a total of over 220 different crops and animals are in production. And then I do have a top 10 list here, and wine grapes do show up on that list, but they're not very high. Surprisingly to probably people around here, greenhouse and nursery products are the top producing category in the state. And most of that happens up in the Willamette Valley. You get off of I-5 very far and you see some really big operations that are quite impressive when you actually look at what they do. After greenhouse and nursery, we have hay, we have cattle and calves, and milk, which in a lot of respects are kind of all the same thing. Because if you're growing hay, you're probably growing cows, too. Those are products that definitely happen in Douglas County. Grass seed is number five. Wheat is number six, which is not a lot of it is grown around here, but you have Columbia Basin, Eastern Oregon, Columbia Plateau are pretty big in wheat. And then number seven is where wine grapes come into play. And, you just look around and you can see how big of a part of local agriculture wine grapes are, from, you know, the small couple operated vineyard all the way to the really big ones that look so busy. I mean, when I drive by and say, wow, those guys are busy, you know, it's busy.
Well, so. Yeah, and you have some of these that are hundreds of acres in size, or at least companies owning hundreds of acres, or maybe not all in the same place. Sometimes they capitalize in different climates and have land in different parts of the valley.
Yeah, it's definitely a specialty crop, and there's a lot of different ways to fit into that specific crop, just like there's a lot of different ways to fit into, say, I'll mention number eight is potatoes. Treasure Valley and the northeastern part of the state and Columbia Basin grows potatoes. And then number nine is blueberries, which we've got a couple big blueberry producers here, some of them fairly notorious, I'd say. And then Pears rounds out the list at number 10, and that is mostly the Hood River area for pears. Some of it down in the Rogue Valley, but the pear growers around here are almost all local sales.
Well, and it's interesting. I didn't really realize we had very many pears around here.
We don't have tons of pears here, not acre-wise, or, you know, there isn't really a major packing industry for pears here like there is down in the Rogue Valley or up in the Hood River area.
And the blueberries has continued to get bigger. I remember several years ago, Norris was began to export. I don't remember. I want to say South Korea, but I could be wrong. Yeah. Where there was some, you know, and that was like a really big deal.
Yeah, Norris Farms has been, I think to say that they're aggressive in opening new markets is an understatement. When you look at what they've done, it truly is an impressive accomplishment.
So for your family, for your farms, what kind of things are you focusing on?
Right now we are just, we're on the cusp of getting into outdoor farming as far as the annual crops, getting planting and everything. The soil is just a little bit colder than I'd like to see right now, and we're not getting the energy to warm it up. So we've got several things started in the greenhouses. We do have a heated greenhouse. It's expensive to run, but it's worth it to get the early jump on things. So tomatoes and peppers and some melons and things like that we have started indoors. It won't be safe for them to be outdoors until the end of April, probably.
And what are some of the things over the course of the year crop-wise that you guys focus on?
I don't think I focus on much of anything because we grow a lot of different crops. Acreage-wise, alfalfa is our largest acreage. It's something we use to keep the ground healthy in rotation, to kind of clean up ground, give it a rest from tillage, although we've reduced the intensity of our tillage over the past few years. Still giving a 4 or 5 year break to a field is pretty nice. After that, you know, sweet corn. It's a lot of people know us for our sweet corn. Hopefully I'll get the first sweet corn planted here in the next couple weeks, but you can really throw away money if you put corn seed in dirt that's too cold.
Interesting. And so when you plant that, when is that first corn available?
If we're really lucky, we'll have corn available on the 4th of July. That's happened sporadically. We need a really early, hot batch of weather to get that corn to mature properly. There's definitely enough sunlight to do it, but we need the heat units to go along with it. But generally, mid-July is when we expect that to go. And some years when we don't have a late freeze, we'll have corn for Christmas.
Wow.
So it's definitely a long harvest season for that.
And for your farm, for farming in general, the area, I mean, everybody's had different impacts from this pandemic. What's it been like for farming?
There have been certain sectors of farming that have been hit by the COVID regulations a lot more than we have. We're, as far as farm goes and workforces go, we're a pretty small operation. We grow a lot of different things, and, you know, we do have several hundred acres, but our workforce is not huge. Areas where they bring in large crews to, say, pick a massive number of cherries or pears, and they provide some high-density housing for that, they've been hit pretty hard with not being able to house as many workers. So that's probably been the biggest impact for COVID, for agriculture in general. For us, the general availability of labor, the labor markets are definitely affected by this. And there's been some programs available that really haven't driven people out to look for work.
And do you find that because of this, some folks that maybe might travel and work in different areas throughout the year doing agriculture just haven't been doing that?
That's what I've heard from other growers. The migrant workforce has been in short supply. A lot of that is because of uncertainty of they don't know if they're going to have a place to live during, you know, the 3 weeks of harvest at this one farm or maybe 6 weeks at another farm. So there's been some uncertainty there. It is not something that our farm experiences at all. And I don't think there's a lot of that around here for local agriculture, although I know Norris is on their blueberries, and I think the other blueberry farm uses a pretty big labor force for harvest.
Got to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back, a look at Ag with Evan Cruz. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 at News Radio 1240 KQEN. Douglas County, 1249. Lars Larson coming at 1 later today. KQEN Local Talk at 4. Northwest Wine Radio. Brian Calvert looking at wine, beer, and spirits around the Northwest. Evan Cruz here, National Ag Week. And of course, he's from the Cruz Farm family who's been farming here for how many years?
Well, 1923 is when Cruz Farms first started. So we're getting pretty close to our 100th year.
So in a couple of years, there might be a big celebration in order.
Oh, we might have a carrot cake.
Always understated. So in the last few years in farming, how is the technology that you use, has it changed like it has for a lot of other people?
It really has. And in our farm, and it probably extends to some of the other farms that people interact with around here. In a lot of ways, we're too small to benefit from that technology because there's a capital cost, and then you've got to be able to pay for the capital. But we're starting to see some really neat technologies trickle down into smaller sizes or something that may in the near future be more accessible to a smaller farm. But we're seeing a lot of precision agriculture. I do have a precision-guided tractor. We've got one on the farm, and it has streamlined a lot of different tasks. So instead of just, you know, I plant something in a field, and then you worry about the other stuff later, I have to plan out all the tasks for that field before I plant. And that really was a different way of thinking about the farm, but it did free up a lot of labor for other things that were hard to get to.
So what's different about how that operates?
Well, I have a tractor that can drive the same row within about a half of an inch. They guarantee it for 3 years. So I have repeatable pathways on the tractor. So I can actually set that tractor on and make sure the field's cleared out and safe, but the tractor drives itself, so I operate the implement myself and can, like close cultivating, around some of the plastic row mulch we have, I can actually get accurate enough to where I slip knives under there and can use steel blades instead of, say, an herbicide to take care of weeds.
Wow. So instead of a smart car, this is like a smart tractor.
Yeah. The guidance is a lot more focused on being precise rather than being automated. So it still takes a lot of operator input, but it takes care of the most difficult part, which is driving really straight, really accurately.
Wow. And I'm sure that though a lot of work goes into it at the front end, it sounds like it's pretty advantageous.
It does pay for itself down the road, yeah. The other thing that we had on our farm, it was a trial. There's a weeding robot that was being it's working already, but they're extending its use. So we had a company come out and use one of our fields to train a weeding robot. It didn't actually do any weeding. It was collecting data all year. And pretty neat to see that thing. It is fully autonomous, but OSHA requires there to be a handler with it. So it, you know, if the robot goes crazy, they can shut it down real quick. But to watch it operate and do its thing and think about the impact that will have on agriculture is pretty significant.
I suppose there's not one of those available for my front yard.
There probably will be soon. I think the homeowner market is something those companies are looking at.
Wow. That's amazing to think about. So spring is here. You talked a little bit already about sort of the transition, and it sounds like timing is all about sort of moisture and temperature.
There's temperature, soil moisture. Yeah, you work soil too early and you pay for it all season. You only have one chance to break that soil the first time unless you do a whole bunch of work to kind of reset things. And at that point, maybe you're losing money as a best case scenario. You're losing a little bit of money as a best case scenario. So it's nice to get it right the first time. What we're doing right now is we're kind of wrapping up our winter maintenance. So orchard pruning. We have bees in the stone fruit, so peach orchards right now are in bloom. We have bees out there. We're doing some cleanup in those orchards. Next, we'll have apples and cherries in bloom, and the bees will have to move over there. So we're trying to get the outside stuff done before we're going to have a big rush in the greenhouse to get the rest of our seed planted when it comes in. Actually, that's another thing that's happened with COVID is things like seed orders are a lot less predictable, and it definitely has thrown timelines for a loop.
So some of the, and like people have seen with other things like toilet paper or whatever, sometimes it's easy to get it and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, and being able to plan a week ahead and look at the weather and say, oh, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're going to be planting in the greenhouse, but the seeds aren't here, so we have to find other things that the crew can do, and then hopefully we get some other rainy weather that is nice for indoor work rather than outdoor work.
So for the local ag community, what kind of connections do folks have with each other as farmers of various size plots of land?
Well, I think the biggest connection that I see is probably Farm Bureau, which I'm a big supporter of. It's definitely a neat way for farmers to come together. When you look at the similar people in each industry, you've got a great association for the grape growers. Are they competing against each other? Yeah. Are they cooperating with each other? Yeah. I think that whole concept of co-opetition is really big in agriculture. Rarely do you see a farmer not bend over backwards to help the guy they're competing against, because we all see that a healthy ag economy is something that helps everybody out.
So how does that come out in practical ways? I mean, is it something where somebody has a fence blow over or needs to borrow a piece of equipment because theirs is in the shop, or what kinds of things happen?
It's wide ranging. You know, if somebody's got a implement that's broken and they're in a time crunch and somebody else is sitting there with the implement not running, I've seen people go over and just do the work for them. You know, you just hop on and get it done. And, that's sometimes better than letting somebody borrow your equipment. Just go and do it, so you know it's taken care of. Maybe I'm short on a variety of seed, and I know somebody who has some. I know it's coming, but it's not here yet. If the plantings work out, yeah, we'll borrow seed across the county.
So you always hear about in national reports sometimes big ag, and then you hear about family farms that are really having a lot of trouble. What's your perspective on all that?
I have some statistics somewhere in here about the percentage of farms that are family owned, and let's see if I can find it. So in Oregon, 97% of Oregon farms and ranches are family owned. Now, there was some tax law that encouraged farms to become incorporated, which is something that we did. We're technically a corporation, but the owners are me and my aunt and my uncle. So when you start looking at statistics, we may show up as that big ag corporation, but we're not. So 97% of farms are and ranches are family owned and operated. The big ag thing, you do tend to see it in the big growing regions like, you know, down in California and Arizona. You will see large companies that run thousands and thousands of acres. But the closer you are to home, the less likely you are to run into that aspect of agriculture.
And 30 seconds left. What's ahead on your farming schedule in the next few days?
Next few days, we're really waiting for seed to come in, and we're waiting for the dirt to dry out a little bit more. So I'm still in trying to get ahead on other preparations that will make, you know, the next few weeks when we do get to go a little bit easier and smoother.
And I think the weather coming, once we get through a little bit of rain today, I mean, we may be looking at 70 on Sunday. So
that'll help. All right. And I'll take it.
All right. Evan Cruz, Cruz Farms, taking a look at Ag on National Ag Week. Thanks for coming in.
Always a pleasure.
1258 at News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.